You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Slowing it down for all you couples out there. Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm not. Joining me right now is Mike Musselman. Gunner, how you doing?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
I got no problems. I got no problems today. How was your weekend?
It was great. It was fantastic.
You do
fantastic.
You do anything? You do anything exciting?
No. I just kind of hung out. Did the normal stuff and normal weekend.
Okay, why would you start that nonsense and like so that for 6 hours we had to have like a texting event during Saturday's baseball game?
I cannot recall anything. Did I text you?
So the game started going to come on.
Did I?
And
wait,
this is not again.
Let me go back and look. Do my notes here.
It would be one thing if it was like a normal 3-hour baseball game. This thing went 15. It went 15 innings.
16 innings. 16 innings.
Of me and the Clown Brothers texting back and forth. Okay?
Why did we have to resort to name calling? See, I was refraining. You were calling us the Bozo Brothers. The Bozo Brothers. And I was calling you Clinton's defense attorney.
The best was the Pollyanna. The best was a picture of Pollyanna. I hate Montana man who is telling us that he got the stomach flu after going fishing while he was drinking during the day, right? Did he sound okay on Friday?
Yeah.
He sounded okay on Friday, right?
Right.
Right. Saturday. I've got the stomach flu. Yeah, that happens when you drink your Maker's Mark out in the
right
out in the sun while you're fishing, you dumbass.
Yeah, don't drink bourbon. Don't drink bourbon in the sun.
Like,
that's smart.
Hello, but I had a hat on.
Stomach flu. I love that. I love that stomach flu.
I had a hat
I
on.
I just drank a half a fifth of bourbon, and I got the stomach flu.
Yeah.
Is that what we call it?
I can't figure it out. That's what the Irish call it,
yeah.
Right? I remember my grandma. I remember, honestly, this. I'm a little kid growing up in Sacramento, and they used to have the St. Patrick's Day parade at night. And everybody's getting, drunk. And this is when I think my dad was either managing the A's or he was a coach for them, because I was like 11 or 12. And we got invited into the upstairs of somebody's, I don't know what it was. It was the space above their store. And it had a balcony to look out on K Street, right? And so my grandma was up there, and I see this old guy. He's throwing up into a metal bucket. And so I look, and I'm like, Grandma, what's wrong with him? She's like, Michael, he's got the Irish flu. I said, oh, really? What's the Irish flu, Grandma? And she looks at me and she goes, he drank too much. Yeah, even the Irish know about it, okay? So, anyway, yeah. So, Mike starts this nonsense and...
Whoa.
And I think most people know me. I'm pretty reasonable, but I do not stand... I do not stand aggression well. And then Montana man, he piles on. I'm like, and I say, quote, we are not going to do this for the duration of this game. And I get back twice. Do what? I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe someone else in that group texted that you thought it was me and or Rob.
Here we go. Then we're going to do this. Okay. I wish I had the power to shut this off, but I can't. because I don't stand aggression like that. So now I think Montana Man at some point, like by like the 12th inning, he like was tired of the acrimony, and he says, because there was a big fiasco about a play in the game in like the 9th or 10th inning, and the Bozo brothers went hysterical. And so trying to get away from that, Montana Man says, I really hate when two great pitching performances go to waste like this. I'm like, So I found this really funny picture of Pollyanna, right? And I, me too! I don't like when bad things happen in the world! But with
no. We're talking like that's like Bozo the Clown now, or Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse. I don't like when bad things happen in the world. It really makes me sad. So, to Montana Man's credit, he never responded to that. But it went on like that for 6 hours. I think Mike actually at some point left and then came back. Did you?
No, I was watching the whole game.
Yeah. Game was pretty...
My phone was dying, so I had to plug it in.
It was incredible. I mean, 16 innings.
It was such fucking Andrew Benatenti, whatever, that little clown. You know, for him not having his head in the game, running with his head down, and, you know, they showed that again. The base coach is telling him to go to third. He holds up at second. He clearly could have beat that throw. I mean, he could have walked in.
It wouldn't have even gone to third. It would have gone to second.
Then the sack bunt, you know, then the sack fly to right field, game over, man.
Hey, we were talking about this. I learned the skill that I think helped me do my job in Iraq was keeping your head in the game and watching little things that made a difference and being able to see those things. And when you saw these little things happen, you would be able to warn people. You had your head in the game. I learned that as a little kid. I learned that as a little kid playing baseball. And there's not one part of me that's joking about that. I learned how to pay attention to small things in a dynamic event, in playing baseball, and how it changes pitch to pitch, literally changes. How it changes when a runner's on first as opposed to when he's on second with one out or two outs. And depending on the score, do you even need to pay attention to the runner at second? No, we're up by four. Right. This guy doesn't matter. Base hit, throw to second base, don't waste the throw. Got it? Trying to make sure the idiots know what's going on. Because they're kind of like the step and fetch crew, right? And the further away from home plate you play, the stupider you tend to be. So like outfielders, you have to yell at them what to do. And really throw it to me because you know what they're going to do. They're going to pick it up and throw it over everybody's head because they're that kind of, that's why they're playing so far. Chase it down and throw it to me. Okay. So yeah, that's my.
Yeah. I was so pissed, man. That play. And I said it. That's the game right there. They're going to lose.
No, the Red Sox were like, what were they like? 0 for 54 at one point with runners in scoring position. It was painful.
Oh, it was horrible.
I didn't realize they were that offensively inept, but they don't have very many hitters, man.
No. What got us going with that, all the name calling with the Bozo and me sending a picture of the Mad Hatter, because you were out to lunch, man. You were with Alice in Wonderland at her little tea party in the garden when you thought that play when Idiot Boy thought he could go back to first base and he could have two runners sitting on first base.
Maybe a base running error in the course of a baseball play is not obstruction, though.
Okay, so now I've got
the Bozo brothers in stereo, right? Going crazy, and they collectively don't know shit about baseball. And they, Mike copies and pastes the rules. And I will tell you this:
you know just as much.
Wait.
Because if I don't know shit, then you think that was not interference.
I know it's not. The umpires ruled it wasn't. The guys they're talking to will be the guys who rule on the appeal. They agree with them. So I'm just telling you, they're the guys who read the rule book, who know the rule book, and you guys got it wrong, and the guys on Fox broadcasting the game.
Nope.
Obstruction is different than being stupid and running back to a base.
I didn't say it. I said interference. You read the wrong rule.
So that gets the whole thing going, and then it all sorts itself out when the Yankees ultimately win the game. Then
that game's in protest. So the Red Sox took it 2-1 this weekend.
The lines of communication go dead at that point. Now,
I was pissed.
So then Sunday, first game, Yankees spanked the Red Sox again, 3-0.
Oh, spanked them?
River City. And not a word is said during the whole thing. Which is going to be it's a trend here. And then
I'm not going to be a dick on church day.
Oh, you have changed then. And then last night, but for the play of a center fielder, that game's in jeopardy. So anyway, but no, fun weekend of baseball. And brings out the best in my friends, which is always enjoyable. And so.
Yeah, it was good banter. It was innocent banter until the part where you started calling us Bozo. And then you resorted to putting pictures of Bozo the Clown.
Tell me you didn't laugh. I mean, Bozo the Clown, we grew up with him, right? But when you see like a real picture of him with his red hair sticking out, pretty funny.
Yeah. No, the Pollyanna was the best one. That was pretty funny, man.
So yeah, but it went on and on. It was like I said, the game was 6 hours long. It's like, oh my god, and you know.
Oh, I know.
And then I'm thinking,
the
now
wife came out. It was like, are you still? I was like, I got to.
I can't let this go.
It's already invested. You know?
Exactly. You know, and then I started thinking about this. Now in our group, there's five of us, right? Three of us are participating, but there's two others whose phones are just blowing up. They have nothing to do with it. And you know, somebody's sitting there going, Dad, what is wrong with your phone? And he's just going, I have stupid friends. I have stupid friends, and they do stupid things, okay? So that's all I can tell you. Mm-hmm. That's all I can tell you is that when you grow up, don't be stupid.
But they didn't interfere because they didn't know. They didn't want to be that guy that gets it wrong, because then they would have been on the receiving end both sides.
Yeah. No, if they would have interfered, they know what they would have gotten. They would have got it, like, in triplicate, shut up.
Yeah,
and then we would have turned
Big
on
Cat,
him.
Big Cat being a San Francisco Giant fan, I mean, that's complete lose-lose, man.
Yeah, he doesn't say too much. He doesn't talk much baseball these days. So he's
no.
And then Rudy, I don't know what he was doing. He was taking pictures with his wife someplace, I think. Oh,
yeah,
no,
he was kicking her booty.
He lost his wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had lost his wallet, too, so he wasn't saying anything. Hey, on a serious subject, another police shooting in Minneapolis, this time of a woman who called him.
Yeah.
And I was talking earlier about it, and I mentioned your discussion about the need for police departments all over the country to get their police officers to some kind of realistic level of training that replicates...
Hyper-realistic, yeah. Hyper-realistic training that replicate real-life situations, that immerses them, not this stupid shit where they put the screen up on a wall and it's a disc recording from the 70s of a guy getting out of the car, and then they pause it and go, okay, what do you do? Or I tell them to, let me see your hands. All right, hit play. And then you react to this thing, and then you get criticized later on. You know, it's like, because the disc skips. you know, and it shows the guy's gun next Monday. How did he draw so fast? No, I'm talking about no shit like that stuff down in Seagal Studios in San Diego where it smelled like it. It felt like it. It looked like it. I mean, that was a damn duck walking across the street. And I mean, it was where I had guys that were so going back into their mindset that they hired actors that had, you know, lost limbs. And then they had these prosthetic legs that when the fake ID would blow apart, the leg would come off and all this blood would be coming out. I had a corpsman that went back to the way he was supposed to train because he was in the moment. He was there again in Iraq. And he was going to stick this actor, you know, with a real needle. And, you know, and we're pulling him back going, hey, doc, take a minute. Well, because that is what you need. You need hyper-realistic training. You need, like, Hollywood studio stuff, stuff they do in 21 Palms for the Marines.
Right.
You know, that's what you need to immerse these guys in, not these bullshit, you know, training-isms that, you know, all they do is create scars. You know, and the worst thing you can have is what we call a training scar. And that, it pisses me off that they still haven't learned this. You know, they're not asking for, no one's saying, hey, I need help with this. I guess that's what's really kind of ticking me off. Everybody's that, you know, I got it. And I'm not, believe me, I'm not a guy that's bashing the police. I'm doing fundraisers and everything for it. But I see that there's a need, you know, that you need to step it up. You need, good enough is not good enough anymore.
The, let me, okay, so, being critical of police training is not being critical of the people who go out there heroically every day. We went through the same shit, and Mike was a part of it, in 2004 when we had such a huge problem with escalation of force.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and
we were shooting everybody.
And the reason we were shooting everybody is that Marines were scared shitless because of the suicide vehicle-borne IDs, loading up a white Opel with a bunch of 155, 152 rounds, right, and driving it into a convoy, driving it into something, and killing a bunch of people. So a vehicle coming at you was a no-shit real threat. And I always say, to me, the biggest threat between Iraq and Afghanistan was in Afghanistan, you didn't live with that kind of paranoia every day that every vehicle that came towards you was going to blow up because they just didn't do it. But it was terrible. When you went out on the road, I'll tell you this. I remember when I left Iraq in 2004, we flew to Kuwait. We're at Camp Victory, you know, for our whatever, 2 or 3 days there. We're on our way to the airport in Kuwait City. We're on a bus and we're driving on the interstate. And pulled off to the side of the road is a fuel tanker, chrome. There's a guy in his white man dress outside it on the traffic side of his vehicle on a cell phone. And he's looking like down the road as we come, looking at us as we come driving by that fuel tanker truck. And we drove by there and I swear to God, I closed my eyes. And I was sitting there, you know, with a few guys you're flying with or whatever. And I looked and I said, was I the only one that was about to bomb it? And then everybody said the same thing. No, man, I thought that thing was so going to blow up. And that's how good the Iraqis were at doing that stuff. And so our escalation of force, we were killing too many civilians in that fear, you know, both while we were moving, which we ultimately started doing movements at night when they weren't on the road. And then also on when we'd have checkpoints we'd set up, you know. And Mike, talk about what we did in terms of what Marines would lay out so that we would try to not, you know, kill innocent people.
What's that?
In the escalation of force stuff, talk how we changed what we did to stop killing civilians, ultimately to what
Marines. We took that tactical operational pause and kind of reevaluated the situation and, you know, and, or we, we created more time and distance for you to have a better thought process. You know, that was the biggest problem, is we didn't have time, we didn't have distance, time and distance to make those reactions. A lot of those things that are already on us, and we had to react, and it was always the reaction, most of the time, was not a good reaction. But by creating time and distance, you know, you give yourself a better chance to absorb that information, to practice, you know, again, without going into it, but what we talked about is that loop decision-making process, and to come out with a better solution. So, I mean, it was horrible.
There was, and I'll tell you what, and the solution, the way we did it was everybody had to carry concertina, signs, you had to have spike strips, you had to have, you know, all, if you were going to put down, and we used to do this all the time, and we used to get great results with them, but they're called snap VCPs, which is you're going to take your battle space and you're saying, okay, at 2 o'clock, we're going to throw, vehicle checkpoints down all over the AO and start randomly, you know, every vehicle, check it out. And we used to catch a lot of bad guys, when we do that stuff. So it was a very effective tool. You know, you had bad things happen, when the Iraqis would get scared, they'd come around the corner and they'd hit the gas. And you'd get, and the Marines would be scared, so they'd shoot the vehicle. And so, you know, so it went through, how do you engage the vehicle? Into the engine block first. And then if you have pen flares, those get shot. So it was this whole escalation of force that started when this vehicle kind of came towards you and did not do the things that it was supposed to do. And I think that's what we're looking for from the police of the United States, Mike. Do you see any indication that that's happening?
Not to the level that probably needs to be done. I know people are trying to do it, but they're, you know, and the problem is it costs money.
Yeah.
You know, and it does. I mean, I'm not, it costs, that's a substantial amount of money to get that type of training.
But this again, up in, and somebody just messaged me, Mac, I haven't heard about the incident. All I've got to do is turn on the news today. But in the Twin Cities, some kind of prowler in the alley or something around a home, a woman calls 911 and ultimately is killed by Minneapolis police responding to the incident.
From inside the police car, she approached the police car, was talking to the police. And from initial reports, was one of the officers within the car shot her.
The other thing that's disturbing about this is evidently the body cameras for the police officers weren't on. Now I don't know what the procedures are, but I thought those things were supposed to be on, you know, so that you would have this kind of information about what exactly happened. But you know, it's just,
yeah, who knows now?
Yeah, who knows? It's just shit, you know, somebody dead, right? And you don't get to come back from dead. Dead is dead. And just
dead is dead.
It's just frustrating. Just frustrating. Email. Mac, do you guys always fight like this about sports?
We're not fighting.
No, only when we're on opposite sides and we're really more conversing than fighting. It's not, it's the way we show affection.
It's an odd way to show it, but that's the way to show it.
Yeah, it's the way we show it. The let's see, Mac. I've listened to you guys, and it's now 3 hours of the best hours of my day listening to All Marine Radio. As a former Marine, you guys take me back to my days on active duty. The way you guys talk shit. I have a question for you, and it's a serious one that deals with depression. Do you guys deal with it? And if you do, how do you deal with it? And maybe depression's not the right word. Maybe a better word for it is a funk. that I don't want to talk to people. I don't want to deal with people. I don't want to leave my house very much. Have either one of you guys ever dealt with that? And if so, what do you do to get out of it? Mike, you ever deal with that?
No. No. Not anymore.
What do you mean? So, yes, but in the past? So the question is, if you've ever dealt with it, is there anything that you do to deal with it, to get yourself out of it?
I talked about it. I talked about people that, you know, that I trust and, you know, that type of thing.
So you just talk?
Yeah.
You know, when I've gone through that, I would tell you that I do things that that are not good for me. And what are they? I stop PTing is one of the things. And I find that just being physically active is incredibly, I can't tell you the difference between, and I went through a period, you know, months ago like this. You know, for me to sleep eight hours or be in bed for 8 hours is not something I do. Because I can't sleep that long, and so I wind up getting up 5 or 6 hours. To me, is if you can sleep that long at night, and it's not continuous sleep either. It's being woken up probably every hour, and so uninterrupted sleep is not something that I do, and I don't want to take any medication for it, just me, Being physically active is, to me, get active physically. That's the start of getting back to me. And so normally when I go through things like that, and it's easy when you work out of your home. Because, you know, you get up, you work at home, you know, if you cannot leave the house for days if you don't make yourself. Go to the store. Ooh, big deal. So my own thing is be physically active, work out, PT, and I think that's, for me, that's the beginning of getting back to being me. And I think it's really good for the mental benefits just as much as it is for the physical benefits. So, and that's what I'll tell you. But and Mike's piece is, the second piece is, if you stay plugged into your friends, I think a lot of times they can tell. And they'll reach out. So that's, and again, honestly, that's the purpose of All Marine Radio, is to provide those reminders to people, post-combat related mental health, man. It's not easy. And I was talking to a caisson Marine last night, and he told me, he said, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about it. Not a day that goes by.
Yeah.
He said, and that was, what, 50 years ago? That it'll be, caisson is in 68. It'll be 50 years ago, next spring, that they were on caisson. And, he said, not a day of my life that I don't think about it. And it was kind of interesting because, he asked me this, Mike. He said, hey, Mac, what do you think about when people tell you that, hey, you need to get over it and, you know, you should learn how to deal with that and put it in the past? And I kind of chuckled, and I told him kind of the story of my gunny telling me you'll never get over it after a helicopter crashed and killed four Marines in the middle of my assembly area, killed four Marines. And he gave me that advice, hey, you're never getting over this. But I will tell you that it was the best advice anybody ever gave me in my entire life. You'll never get over this. Because whenever, and I've given it to Marines a lot in my life, in that, and you're like, oh, thank God, so it's okay that this bothers me? Like, hello? Yeah. Like, how do you get over that? You know? You learn to live with it. You learn to coexist with it. But you don't get over it. What are you doing? Where are you going? Why am I hearing car noises?
No, you heard the fax machine. Actually, I had to use the fax machine.
What are you doing? Cool. Are you doing? Are you doing election stuff?
Yeah, actually, I was. So Ron, he's the one running for office And so I did a, to cover all the bases, we did a, I sent away for his records, his military records.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, so that way, as you know, you remember that. I mean, those are important things you got to have. You got to have the exact stuff.
Yeah, should people go looking? And the other thing is that it's an asset. If you served honorably, you have those documents, you can put them out there. You know, I'm curious, Mike, to get your opinion of the whole political process. I didn't particularly care for it. Politics is a greasy, dirty business in this country. And
it is. At every level, I'm finding out.
Yeah.
Even the small city, yeah. You got guys that are in there that shouldn't be in there making decisions that they shouldn't be making.
Right.
And they're not the best decisions for everybody.
Well, and what'll kill you is that I don't know who's going to, if there's a local newspaper, but sometimes the newspaper has an agenda and they have a candidate they like. And all of a sudden you look around and you're like, are you shitting me? I thought this was about the truth. Or I guess it's not. And it's not. And when somebody doesn't like something, it doesn't matter if it's true. What they do is they discredit it. And the example I'll give you is Ray Nagel, happily the former Secretary of the Navy. But when the Marine Corps published its ground combat integration study, right, millions of dollars to execute, the only service branch that undertook anything of it. He knew what the findings were going to be. He had been briefed, at least verbally, what they were going to be. And so, because he's a political hack piece of shit, what did he do? On the eve of it being issued, he hammered it. He hammered the people involved in it. And that's how politics is. He tried to publicly discredit it. And the next time he was in front of the Senate Armed Service Committee, John McCain wire brushed his ass. It was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. Asking him, did you read it before you made those comments? And, you know, he's hemming and hawing, doing his Porky Pig impersonation. But that's the way politics is. It doesn't matter what the truth is. It only matters what you can get out there and what you could substantiate. And I think it's
we already had an issue here because, you know, Ron's been running. We've been doing a lot of stuff, and then one of the guys that's in city politics starts. This is an adult, you know, educated guy. Starts spreading rumors that he was running for office at the last minute. He was going to decline, and then basically turn the seat over to another guy. That this was all just a ruse. And so he was contacted, made contact, said, you know, hey, apparently you don't know who this, you know, who we are, and what the agenda is, and here's what it is, and if you need help, or you need some kind of, you know, hey, here's the truth of what's going on, you know, why would a guy dump $10,000 into an election, you know, basically just to bow out at the last minute and hand it over to somebody? It's not what we're going to do. It's not what we're about.
And Mike, this,
of course, he did the Porky Pig.
Yeah, and wait till he continues to do it, and closer to the election, when there's, you know, then you have limited time to kind of counteract what he does. You'll know what a piece of garbage that he is. And this election is over what seat? A judgeship?
County judge.
So, no, it's just an interesting. It's quite the eye opener, politics. American politics are. My idea was that, well, this will just be an extension of my service and blah, 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 blah. And then you get into it. And I looked around, I'm like, holy shit, man. It's not about the truth. It's not about what's right. It's about what I want. And, you know, what.
Yes.
Yeah. And so so I'll be curious to get your thoughts as you continue to go down this. Email question. Hey Mac, Gunner lives in Texas now. What's the best piece of fresh grown produce he's had since he moved to Texas? Mike?
best piece of fresh grown. The peppers down here are ridiculously good.
What kind of peppers?
Yeah, because your serrano peppers, your jalapenos, all that stuff, man, it is to die for. Tomatoes are really good down here, homegrown. You know, a lot of that kind of stuff.
Do you buy your stuff at, do you go to farmers markets or you just go to the grocery store? Or
half and half.
All right. I'm a grocery store kind of guy. Not that I won't go to farmers markets, but I tend to, I don't know, I tend not to go. I mean, if I see one, I'd stop and go, I guess.
Yeah, there's a few places out here where people are selling products, you know, on the side of the road and stuff, and they're really good, you know. And then on the way to church, there's a guy around the side of the road that sells, like, some of the best cantaloupe and watermelon and tomatoes and all that stuff, all homegrown. It's so good.
I got an email. You and I were talking about hothouse grown fruit a while ago, weren't we? Was it you and I? Oh, and just how it tastes like crap. I mean, it looks like, you know, something that you've consumed. But I will tell you something that is absolutely delicious. Real cantaloupe, real watermelon, real honeydew melon.
Yeah.
Juicy, ripe, in season.
Oh, man,
that stuff is so good. And then you eat something that is hothouse, out of season, and you're just like, what is this? I mean, it's the right color and all that, but it tastes like absolute shit.
Yeah, it lacks all the flavor.
Yeah, it's like, oh, get this out of here. The I had some avocados over the weekend to die for. To die for. They were, what's the kind of avocado that we all eat? There's a certain name for it. Anyway.
Haas.
Haas.
H-A-S. Yeah.
Yeah, they're Haas, but they're giant Haas avocados. Again, perfectly in season, and I just happened to walk into the store right at the right time, and I grabbed them, and I'm like, oh, these are going to be good. And they were absolutely delicious. Fresh produce, especially if you've lived in California and the southern tier where they do a ton of farming of fresh fruits and vegetables, it's absolutely awesome. Do you have a favorite, fresh fruit vegetable?
A favorite?
Yeah.
No.
Give me one. Favorite fruit, favorite vegetable.
Favorite fruit, probably cantaloupe.
Cantaloupe, all right. Mine's strawberry.
Mine's cantaloupe. And then my favorite vegetable?
Yeah, favorite vegetable.
Probably, carrots. Homegrown. You know, ground carrots, where they, you know, oh, they're so good. You know, not the stuff you buy in the stores, but the carrots that you get at the farmers markets. They're so good. Radishes. I love radishes.
How do you acquire a taste for radishes?
Grandma.
That's like your answer. That's like your answer to everything. Like
my grandma used to grow radishes, and we grew out back when I was a little kid, and we'd go, you know, get vegetables because she had a big vegetable garden, and we'd go through there, and she'd pick stuff out and hand it over to me to take a bite. And the radishes, you know, when she grew them, were so good. Oh,
my grandma. Mike's
grandma.
Mike's official response to everything ever that has to do with food. My grandma. My grandma.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got on the agenda today? Who do the Red Sox play?
I don't know who they're playing today.
Are you concerned about the way they hit? I was surprised.
I was really concerned. It was like, what the hell? I was concerned why they took Sale out in that inning.
Yeah, that was an optional. He had earned the right to stay in and pitch.
Somebody, that guy was still throwing great balls.
Somebody overmanaged him. Yeah. Yeah, it was perplexing to say the least. The Red Sox, I don't know if they play tonight or not. I'm pretty sure the Yankees play your Minnesota Twins.
They play the Twins. Yeah, I knew that.
Yankees and Twins play at 5:10. And so hold on, let me see if the
Red Sox. Let me see. Um, Red Sox play the Jays tonight.
Ooh.
At 6.
The Jays aren't very good. Marcus Stroman.
No, that's
the all right. What else are I going to ask you? Hold on. Quick email. Mac, I've never actually heard a person say that they loved radishes. What is there to like about them, and why the hell do they keep putting them in salads? They're not very good.
So good.
What do you
like?
Yeah,
they are.
I don't know. I don't like radishes. What do you like about them?
I just like the taste. I do. I don't know. I just, like I said, it was something that me and my grandma did, and I've loved it ever since. You know, we'd go out and back, and she always had radishes. So we'd always eat. She had everything back there, Max. She had, I mean, everything.
Wait a minute. But she lived in San Diego, right?
Yeah, but her whole backyard, the whole backyard in the back behind the garage was a huge garden. Blackberries, cantaloupe, tomatoes, you know, all sorts of different things. Radish, carrots, onions.
My grandparents, my mom's mom, they had about an acre and a half in Carmichael, California. And they're originally from the Northwest, from Seattle. My grandfather he's a weird guy. He was like a rower and a marathon guy, like in the 20s and stuff like that. He was teaching accounting at the University of Washington and married my grandmother. She grew up in a convent. Like, what
right.
the hell? He's a perv. Anyway, he raised pigeons, racing pigeons. And he had a pigeon coop. We go out and help in the pigeon coop. And then they had, I don't know, they might have had a quarter of an acre they used for gardening and grew most of their own vegetables and fruits, from grapes to corn to lettuce to tomatoes. They grew all kinds of cucumbers. She grew all that stuff. It was to go to her house for dinner. And you know the other thing, Mike? Were you allowed, did your grandma, I mean, my grandma had the Clean Plate Club. You were not allowed to waste food.
Right. No, and, well, I mean, if you had ever eaten what my grandmother made, you would have realized, you would have never had a full plate anyway. I'm serious, dude. It was always, you know, the food was so good. It was, I can't remember ever having food on the plate when you give it back.
Nice. Yeah, no, my grandma was, and the whole thing from the meal to pies afterwards, I mean, they crushed it in the kitchen. So my grandma, Margaret Forden, been one of the nicest women you'll ever meet. In fact, I still have letters that she wrote me in Iraq. She would say things, she would write me things like, Michael, have you gone to the gardens of blah 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 that are on the outskirts of Baghdad? La 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 la, you know, and she knew all the stuff from subscribing to the National Geographic for years. She's a smart woman,
right?
And devoutly Catholic, and my grandfather was just a stern old jackass. And she was just a nice and always, you know, bought her clothes, impeccably dressed, even in her casket. Just shopped at Nordstrom's when Nordstrom's was kind of a Seattle kind of thing before they went national. And but she'd send me these letters, and I would write them back. And I'd always sign my letters, your favorite grandson. And then she says, you know, I have kind of taken in. She said, in spite of you, she wrote in one of her letters, in spite of your propensity for profanity, I find you amusing, and you are one of my favorite grandsons. And I wrote her back immediately. Look, I know Aunt Edith's reading this, okay? First of all, that surprises me because I didn't even know she could read. So, but my grandmother loved that stuff, and I sent her some stuff from Iraq, but she, you know, and Mike, just my grandmother's penmanship is like artwork. you know, back in the day when they taught you how to write and they got on your ass if you couldn't write well in terms of your penmanship. Hell, now they don't even teach that anymore in school. So.
Yeah, it's all cursive.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't even teach that. I said to Colleen, I'm like, what do you mean you don't learn that? She's like, Dad, they don't teach that anymore. I'm like, they don't teach you penmanship and how to write? She's like, no, that you know, we learn how to print and all that, but no. We're learning keyboarding. I'm like, idiots.
The world today.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for the visit.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right,
good luck. Talking.
Good luck. Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
All right.
See I'll talk to her.
We have the one and only Michael Musselman. We're going to take a quick break. Come back, wrap things up on Monday. More of All Marine Radio. Coming up next right here on your home for All Marine Radio. Your only home for All Marine Radio, and that is the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it on Monday. Thanks for listening. To get a chance, go ahead and read the article that's written by Captain Lauren Finch Serrano. To get out or not to get out. Talks about being a woman in the Marine Corps. Interesting stuff. Now, also, and so I Googled Lauren Finch Serrano. Actually, I looked at her bio. I sent her a message, asked her to come on All Marine Radio. And I just went down her little page on LinkedIn. And there was another link to another article she wrote, which I found kind of interesting. Here's the title: Why Women Don't Belong in the U.S. Infantry. And again, I still haven't sorted out in my head, like, where does this ultimately take us? How does the system work that women require a separate PFT to be competitive for promotion? Okay? Now you wanna be, and I'll use the infantry, you wanna be an infantry Marine. You're weaker and you're slower. And that you and I compete for finite promotions in this MOS. You're weaker and you're slower. How do you get promoted ahead of me? Because the battlefield is not gender normed. The battlefield is what it is. The requirement is what it is. To be strong, to be able to lead from the front, not from the back. So I don't know where this whole thing takes us. And so I'm I try to wrap my brain around it. I try to wrap my brain around it. Thanks for listening on a Monday. Yeah, Lauren F. Serrano, S-E-R-R-A-N-O. So hopefully I'll hear from Lauren, and you'll hear from her. And I'm curious about, and I got another email recently that said, hey, Mac, do you know that the majority of women in the Marine Corps are not down with all of this? Do you know how much time it takes out of a day for a woman to go re-engineer herself in this attempt to be men? We're not made that way. But that is the way we're going. So be it. Interesting stuff. Anyway, have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow morning on a Monday. All Marine Radio. Out.